Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's January 4th, 2016. Our first podcast in the year of the American Idiot.
Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under the new media. And can you hear the sound of hysteria? The subliminal mind of America.
Thanks to Green Day for rocking us into the new year, and I hope you had safe and happy holidays. I had a nice break. We took almost 2 weeks off from the podcast merry-go-round here, and I got to enjoy some time with family. I got a new toy drone for Christmas that I've managed to crash land in trees twice now. I also got to go skiing in the Sierra Nevada for the first time in 2 years because the drought is at least easing here on the left coast. And I got to see the Star Wars film. It is a fine action film product, part of the franchise, and I tend to avoid sequels. But I went with family members, and we all had a good time. The 3D effects were spectacular. For me, there wasn't much of a story, not any great acting or momentous moments, but it was a fun way to spend a couple of hours. I want to recommend a great film that I just saw over this past weekend called The Big Short, and we'll talk more about it in coming days. I hope to get our film reviewer, Gary Chu, to give us his take on the film, but I really enjoyed it. It's about the mortgage meltdown of 2008 and people who knew it was coming, and I think Hollywood did a pretty good job on that picture. And as I say, we'll talk about it in the coming days. There is more news today than I can fit in after a backlog of a couple of weeks. And, you know, during the holidays, Americans hunker down and really ignore the rest of the world. And so it came as a surprise to many people that over the New Year's weekend, what started as a protest on behalf of two ranchers in Oregon who've been sentenced to federal prison, the Bundy Gang. You remember Cliven Bundy from his showdown in Nevada in 2014 with the federal government? Well, two of his sons have found their way to northeast Oregon near Bend, a little town called Burns, and they announced that they are now occupying a federal wildlife refuge called Malheur. Now, it's interesting. The term Malheur means woe in French. And Malheureux means unhappy. So, woe are the people who cross the Bundys and their heavily armed friends. Now, first to the facts of the matter, the Bundys claim that there are up to 100, maybe even 150 armed militiamen, that's in quotes, who have occupied this site, and they say they will lay down their lives to protect it. And, you know, there's a sordid history here. I read a lengthy piece with a lot of bad English and misspellings online, but it does show that the family here, Stephen Hammond, the son of Dwight Hammond, they've been ranching this area for a long time, and they have a long-running feud with the Bureau of Land Management and the Federal Wildlife Service. And it appears that some of their beef is legitimate. I can't unravel it all, you know, just by reading some articles that favor their point of view. But I will acknowledge that they have a long-running dispute with the government, and it has been escalated by their resentencing. Now, Dwight Hammond and his son, Stephen, admit that they started backfires on property that is in dispute. It's either their property or it's adjacent, the federal wildlife refuge that has been expanded around them at some expense to them. And they never, you know, tried to lie about it. They started these fires to try to protect their land. And then they were accused of arson, and they were sentenced to short terms. One of them did like 3 months, the other did a year, and they completed those terms. And this past October, they were resentenced under one of these draconian domestic terrorism laws because the act that had been characterized as arson was now upgraded to a terrorism offense. And on that score, I side with the Hammonds, because I do not see adequate explanations for why their actions could be viewed as some sort of terrorism. Now, that's as far as I go in defending the Hammonds, who, by the way, did not appear to invite the Bundy gang to occupy the Malheur refuge. In fact, they are flatly saying that, Dan Nichols is a county commission, a commissioner, and a neighbor of the Hammond family. The county isn't supportive of what's being done here at all. Once again, it's a bunch of those who live without the county or outside the county telling us what we need to do, how we need to be doing it, and the repercussions if we don't. Now, father and son Hammond have apparently agreed to report to federal authorities and turn themselves in today. And so this makes it a real oddball situation where the Bundys are supporting people who don't want their support. And this, of course, brings back echoes of Ruby Ridge, Idaho, back in 1992, Waco, Texas, the Branch Davidians, remember those characters, in 1993? Both of those were managed by the FBI and the Justice Department and ended in ugly shooting sprees and a lot of people killed. And it fans the flames of the so-called libertarians or the Liberty Lobby in this country, the armed factions that are sometimes aligned with the Tea Party voters. And so this is a messy situation. And how will Team Obama respond to this? After all, with the showdown with Clive and Bundy in 2014, the federal government backed off in the face of these armed vigilantes. And now we have a new group of people who call themselves patriots, but they are nothing more than vigilantes and opportunists. And we may not know exactly what happens until the final chapter of this, because the FBI is promising a media blackout, at least for the time being. And I'm not alone in raising this next question. And let's credit Wajahat Ali, who penned an op-ed for the Guardian newspaper today. And in it, this person says, if the Oregon militiamen were Muslim or black, they'd probably be dead by now. And we know what happened in San Bernardino, where there was this active shooter drill that produced this massive governmental law enforcement response with all their militarized Pentagon offshoots or cast-offs, the Bearcat, armed personnel carriers and all that stuff. We're not seeing that in Oregon. And if these were blacks who were occupying it, like people in Ferguson or other flashpoints in race relations in the United States, we know that there would be a heavy-handed federal response. And so it is fair to note that white guys can get away with stuff that Muslims and African Americans could never attempt. And this is not to say that those who use their First Amendment rights to gather and speak against government abuse, who happen to be black or Muslim, can be equally compared to these vigilantes in Oregon. I don't see any equivalency there, but the law enforcement responses are remarkably different. Well, I have dubbed this the Year of the American Idiot. And Donald Trump is leading that campaign, leading that bandwagon. And today he has finally spent some money. As you may know, Donald Trump has been coasting on all the free media coverage that the networks have given him. All he has to do is attack somebody, make a racist remark, say that Hillary got schlonged, and he'll get unlimited coverage. And he's been able to coast on that. Up to the end of the year, it's estimated he spent less than $300,000 on his political activities. And, of course, he doesn't have a major ground operation in Iowa or New Hampshire, the critical early primary states. And so he is going to the airwaves. And let's listen to the audio from Donald Trump's first TV political campaign commercial of this cycle.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
The politicians can pretend it's something else, but Donald Trump calls it radical Islamic terrorism.
Now, this is a favorite of the far right, the hotheads in talk radio, and Ted Cruz. They think that because President Obama and Hillary Clinton don't want to inflame the entire worldwide Muslim population by referring to this as Islamic terrorism, that there's something wrong with them. But Donald Trump, who's not bound by that kind of namby-pamby political correctness, he's willing to call it what it is. It's stupid. It appeals to American idiots who would rather be proud and self-righteous than address the underlying conflicts that we're dealing with. The commercial continues.
He's calling for a temporary shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until we can figure out what's going on.
And of course, that is just an egregious approach to dealing with a relatively small problem. And the idea that there is some way to manage what he calls a shutdown or a temporary shutdown of access to the United States by all Muslims from any part of the world, it is sheerly ridiculous. And yet it appeals to the low-information American idiot voter. More from the TV spot.
Cut the head off ISIS and take their oil. And he'll stop illegal immigration by building a wall on our...
Okay, so he's going to cut the head off ISIS and stop their oil. They don't say anything about how. Is he a dictator? Is he the new emperor of the United States? And so the oversimplification and the misinformation that is being fed to these people who are fans of Trump, they're not necessarily voters. Many of them aren't even registered or haven't voted in years. So is he able to convert his notoriety into support in the Iowa caucuses and actual votes in New Hampshire and the next primary states? That's an open question. Then we get, and let me just back this up a second or two here so we don't cut the announcer off here. They start talking about, the screen reads, stop illegal immigration.
Building a wall on our southern border that Mexico will pay for.
So the idea, number one, that building a wall is a reasonable idea, and number two, that Mexico will pay for it. Again, these are promises from Trump in a grand and sweeping delusional way. That's not how things work. Donald Trump is claiming that he can remake the way the world works because he's so smart and so rich and, well, you know, all of the fatuous claims that he makes that, make his ego the size of the Hindenburg. And so then Trump closes with his stock line about making America great again.
Make America great again.
Now, first of all, the idea that building a wall across the southern border, number one, would work and keep all of those brown people out, is just crazy. Secondly, this plays on the racist bias and fears of many Americans because, well, here's something you should know. The Department of Homeland Security and its Immigration and Customs Enforcement Wing, ICE, does not know how many people are in this country illegally, not because they swam the Rio Grande or crossed the southern border in some illegal manner, but because they flew in on an airplane, on a tourist visa or a work visa, and then they never went home. Now, we've identified this problem for more than 20 years when Congress passed a law requiring the government to develop a system to track people who overstay their visas. When Janet Napolitano was the Secretary of Homeland Security in 2013, she promised Congress a report on overstay rates by December of 2013, and that report has still not been delivered. They're now claiming that maybe another 6 months we'll be able to tell you. Now, the best available estimates are that as many as 40% of so-called illegal immigrants in the United States didn't swim the Rio Grande, didn't come in on the southern border where Trump promises to build this wall that Mexico will pay for. They came in at airports from Asia, from Europe, from Africa, not just from Latin America. And so this is just another example of how untethered Trump is, how far from reality his campaign rhetoric truly is. And yet there are many American idiots who will swallow it hook, line, and sinker. Meanwhile, get ready for a new wave of deportations from these United States because Jay Johnson, the new Secretary of Homeland Security, announced that there were raids in Georgia, North Carolina, and Texas over the New Year's weekend. 121 adults and children were rounded up and will be deported. And this amounts to the first large-scale effort to deport people who fled violence from drug wars in Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Belize, and let's not forget Mexico, where just one day after being sworn into office in a city outside of Mexico City, a new mayor, a woman, was shot dead in her own home. And so these are drug wars, drug-related wars, related to America's consumption of drugs from Southern Hemisphere locations. And yet we try to blame it all on them. And here's one example. One of the women who was picked up in Georgia, in Norcross, Georgia, by ICE agents who lied to the woman who answered the door. They presented a warrant for an individual who this woman doesn't even know. And she said to stay outside, but the agents forced their way in. They searched the house and then revealed that they were actually looking for Gutierrez's niece, a woman named Ana Lize Mejia. And Lize Mejia recently received a court order to leave the United States after her asylum request was rejected. Now, she left Honduras a couple of years ago in 14 with her son after her brother was murdered by gang members. And these are among many people who are labeled drug war refugees from Central America. And again, there wouldn't be a drug war, there wouldn't be this crossfire if it weren't for the ridiculous drug regulations in the United States that fuel the black market for drugs and the smuggling that occurs. And so we never acknowledge our responsibility for creating the refugees who we are about to deport to the place where they believe they will be killed. Many of these are children. Today, the stock markets around the world opened with a deep plunge, starting with the Shanghai Exchange in China, which dropped by almost 7%. That was followed by Japan, where both Japan and the Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong dropped 3%. The Standard & Poor's here in the United States at midday was off 2.3%, but I didn't see the close. And in Europe, the stocks there fell about 3.3%. And oil prices are still a big issue. With what I'm about to get to, the new wave of unease in the Middle East and the open hostility between nations there, the oil markets in the world are highly volatile and may not recover. Now, that brings us cheap gasoline here in the United States, but the underlying energy industries are being hammered. And this is producing a lot of the social unrest that we're seeing develop in the Middle East, in Russia, where the oil prices have had a dramatic negative impact, and many other countries as well. Every day I like to pause for a minute and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast. Our buddy, the rocker with a smart brain, a political lyricist, John Dist, sent me a nice Christmas card from L.A. Thank you, John. Great to hear from you. Diane Nolan sent me a check because she was having trouble with PayPal covering her monthly subscription. Thanks, Diane. She's right down the road from us in Capitola, California. And I also want to mention Terry Paris and Faith Peoples, two longtime staunch supporters of the Peter B. Collins Podcast. Now, this time of year, I want you to know that if your annual subscription is about to renew, you'll get a notice from us a week before. And January and February happen to be the months when we have the most annual subscriptions renewing. I really need your support. So when you get that notice, I hope you will make sure your PayPal account has enough money to pay for your $50 annual renewal. And I very much appreciate that kind of support. Now, I also want to recruit some new people. Over the holidays, about a dozen people canceled their subscriptions at the end of the year. Maybe they're out of money. Maybe they're tired of listening to me. Maybe they weren't, you know, using the podcast, weren't listening often enough. Those are some of the reasons that I hear from people who cancel. So if you're not a subscriber, and perhaps you're a listener who has joined us in, you know, the last year or so, I want to urge you to come on over to peterbcollins.com. You click on the menu button, then you click on Become a Subscriber. You get a range of choices, $5 a month, $10, $20, the $50 annual. We've got the new Android app that you can use at Spreaker.com, S-P-R-E-A-K-E-R. Get the Spreaker app for your Android phone, and you'll have easy access to our podcasts every day. And there's also the Apple app in the App Store, which works on iPhones and iPads. And these are all the different ways that you can access our podcasts and support the work that I'm doing here. Well, I mentioned this fresh turmoil in the Middle East, and it's a little complicated. It starts with Saudi Arabia, the nation that has beheaded more people than any other, including the so-called Caliphate of the Islamic State. In 2015, Saudi Arabia executed 157 people, and most of those were conducted by decapitation. It's ugly, it's brutal, it is part of Sharia law that many people are offended by. And one of the people that they executed over the weekend is a Shiite cleric named Nimr al-Nimr, N-I-M-R. And along with 46 others, he was, he was executed by Saudi Arabia. This led to an attack on the Saudi embassy in Tehran, Iran. And that started on Saturday, I believe. And by now, Iran has announced that it is cutting off diplomatic ties with Saudi Arabia. And we have three other small nations, Bahrain, Sudan, and the UAE, who are also either severing or downgrading their diplomatic relations with Iran. Now, this presents a whole new layer of problems. We were supposed to see peace talks for Syria start in Geneva, Switzerland on January 25th, and this new rift between the already divided Sunni and Shia powers of Saudi Arabia and Iran, respectively. This creates the threat of an expanded Shiite-Sunni conflict that would be very difficult to tamp down. So that's one layer. Then we have this other layer where the United States, over the holidays, threatened to introduce new sanctions on Iran because Iran did some missile testing and missiles landed close to some American warships in the Persian Gulf. So the United States said, well, we're considering sanctions. And the Iranian response is to say, we're considering building more missiles. These kinds of things don't end well. And I can't predict where they will take us, but not to a good place. I think that is pretty clear. Israel, which often responds to acts that it considers crimes committed by Palestinians against Israelis with a heavy and swift hand. You know, shooting people, burning down their houses, or bulldozing their homes. Well, it took them about 6 months to finally indict and file murder charges against a man and an underage minor for the arson attack last July 31st. On a West Bank family of Palestinians. It immediately killed their 18-month-old son, and the parents were died later, at least one of them did. And today they announced that a 21-year-old from a Jewish settlement in the West Bank, Amiram Ben Uliel, has been charged with 3 counts of racially motivated murder, and a second Jewish defendant whose name was withheld due to his age was charged as an accessory. And defense lawyers say the pair gave false confessions under torture in closed-door negotiations, which that has been denied by the government of Benjamin Netanyahu. I can't evaluate that, but it is some relief to see Israel finally, announce that the investigation has led somewhere. But get this, just last week, a wedding video that surfaced on Thursday, on New Year's Eve, shows a group of young Israelis who are dancing, jumping around, wearing their skull caps, many with the long side locks of Orthodox Jews. Some of them in the video are brandishing guns and knives. Two of them appear to be stabbing pieces of paper that they hold in their hands, which were pictures of the 18-month-old child, Ali Dawabsha, who was burned in that arson attack I just referred to. Now, this is really ugly. Not only that, many of these were underage people who were holding, brandishing, military weapons. Now, this is one snapshot of the mindset of extremists in Israel. And I would argue that extremists are, unfortunately, a large segment of the population in Israel, particularly in the occupied settlements. I haven't seen that video, but just the description is really chilling. You may recall that last year I conducted several interviews with Professor Richard Falk. He's an American who served from 2008 to 2014 as the United Nations Rapporteur for Human Rights related to Israel and the Palestinians. His replacement is an Indonesian diplomat named Makarim Wibisono. And he replaced Falk in June of 2014. And at that time, he said that he had been given assurances by Israel that he'd be allowed to enter Gaza and the West Bank. Richard Falk was never permitted to do so while he was serving. But Wibisono has finally resigned because Israel continues to ignore his requests to visit the occupied areas. His letter says, "With no reply from Israel to my latest request dated October 2015 to have access by the end of this year, it's with deep regret that I accept the premise upon which I took the mandate and that it will not be fulfilled." In the same region, in Dubai, in the UAE, a 63-story hotel and office tower called The Address Downtown Dubai has been the site of a major fire. It has burned for days, and fortunately no one was killed. 14 people were injured. And I just want to note that this steel and concrete and glass office tower still stands. There are still some fires burning. And the owners plan to rebuild it rapidly. And I just point this out because, well, there are people who believe the pancake theory of the World Trade Center attacks in 2001. And I don't believe that theory. And I think that this fire in Dubai is just more evidence establishing that the pancake theory is bullshit. Want to note that there were many very scary warnings that were issued in London, in Berlin, and also in the United States over the holidays. And we'll get to, in the next day or two, one of the individuals who's been arrested after being egged on by an FBI informant to do some so-called domestic terrorist attacks. There were no significant episodes during the holiday break. And on the one hand, we might say, well, that's due to great law enforcement and all the surveillance that they do, and they've kept us safe. But the other possibility is that they have cried wolf way too many times. And that they conjure up a lot of the boogeymen that we are supposed to be cowering in fear over. And it's hard to know. You can't prove a negative. You can't prove when something doesn't happen why it didn't happen. But I, for one, remain skeptical and vigilant at the efforts to scale back our constitutional rights over threats that are either non-existent or not serious. But I appear to be in the minority because only 28% of us oppose unlimited, unwarranted, or actually warrantless is the best way to put it, government surveillance of internet communications. A new poll by the Associated Press shows that 56% of Americans favor and 28% oppose the ability of the government to conduct surveillance on internet communications without getting a warrant. That is the state of the surveillance state of America at the beginning of 2016. And finally today, Bill Cosby has finally been charged with a sex-related crime after the myriad reports from women who claim that he drugged them in order to get them to have sex with him. And the woman who has come forward in Philadelphia is someone that I really respect. Her name is Andrea Constand. And she didn't accept that he could get away with it. And a new prosecutor who ran for office last fall, promising to prosecute Cosby if he could. His name is Kevin Steele. He has followed through and filed those charges just within the window of the 12-year statute of limitations in Pennsylvania. And Bill Cosby showed up in one of those ugly sweaters, you know, the $1,000 kind of sweater he used to wear on the Cosby TV show when he played Cliff Huxtable. And it's going to be a difficult case to prove. It's described as sexual assault, not rape, but there was, to my knowledge, no rape kit or evidence that was collected at the time. That's going to make it a he said, she said confrontation with cameras rolling and the full Hollywood treatment that we haven't seen since the O.J. Simpson case. Thanks for joining me today for my very first News and Comment podcast for the new year. I hope you'll share it widely. I hope you'll support my work. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow right here.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.